Welcome to my block party. Glad you can make it.
The only triple doubles you get come with fries.
Last time you blocked someone, you were online.
I can do this all day. Your moves are just gay.
Using gay to mean dumb or stupid, not cool.
Not cool.
Not in my house, not anywhere.
It's not creative.
It's offensive to gay people.
And you're better than that.
Welcome back, sports fans, to Mass Radio Sports Talk, presented by 3.5 Athletes on Loop Air Student Radio. If you wanted to call on the show, please do it. The number to do so is 253-535-7332. Once again, that is 253-535-7332.
You know, my name is Christian Bond. I am the half athlete here at POU. Kellen Westring joins me. He is a member of the POU football team. Drew Artisoni and Lacey Nicholson are both from POU basketball. That makes up the 3.5 athletes. So we're gonna change things up a bit here. We're gonna talk a little bit about the University of Washington Huskies and what they did over the weekend down in Tucson. It took overtime, but the Huskies pulled off a 35-28 victory over Arizona on the road. Very impressive. What stood out to everyone from that game?
Well, I'm going to have to kick it off with Browning's block. Honestly, I missed it the first time I was watching the game live when John Ross was running. You don't really notice Browning blocking the dude, but when they play the replay, I think the announcers kind of miss it too. They're like, oh my gosh, and did you see this block? It's not every day you see a QB blocking, and here's what Browning had to say about it after the game. I think the standards are so low for quarterbacks blocking that it makes it look good. The guy wasn't even looking at me. Anyone could have made the hit. I think that's a pretty modest response for Browning there, who's only 206 pounds, a sophomore quarterback, against Arizona's 281-pound defensive end, Calvin Allen. So, anyways, Browning went 14 of 21 throwing for 160 yards. His lowest number of passing yards this season, which brings us to UW's running game.
Yeah, you know, that's how you gain respect to your lineman, Lacey. You go stick your nose in and throw a block. That's
John Schaub would do that, wouldn't he?
John would do that. That's how you gain some respect right there. And yes, Lacey, Jake was great. But I think we all have to tip our hat to LaVon Coleman, who had an absolute day with 181 yards on 11 rushes and one touchdown. Do the math, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, that is 16.5 yards a carry. Oof. A potent run game like that really opens up the playbook for Coach Peterson. He's part of that two-back system, sharing carries with Gaskin, who had 88 yards on the ground in this game. Put Ross back there when they really want to get inventive, and I just can't say enough about the creativity displayed in the offensive play calling when it comes to the run game. It's pretty special when they have so many guys that can hand the ball off, not to mention that Jake can scamper off on his own too.
Yep.
16.5 yards a carry. Let's just think about that for a second. That's a dream for any running back.
That's a first down and a half.
So there's that saying, you reap what you sow. When you get on the dock last, folks, you don't quite get to be able to pick out the ones that you want. Because I want to highlight Jake Browning. I want to highlight LaVon Coleman. But they're taken. And you know what? I reap what I sow. So I'm going to choose my third string pick here. So I watched this whole game. I watched it on the couch in my living room. And Azeem Victor was a stud last Saturday. 10 solo tackles.
Wow.
He was flying around. Made some great plays. Some big-time key tackles in key situations on third down, where he would stop them from getting a first down. Kevin King had a crucial interception when Arizona was kind of looking like they were going to score to go up by 3 points. So UW defense played a great game, and obviously we'll get a little bit later in this segment, you know, talking about what they need to do in order to beat Stanford, but I thought their defense stepped up when they needed to in that game.
That's absolutely right. So far this season, it's pretty obvious that this was Washington's first real test. I mean, they've kind of played. They played. Who they played? They played Portland State. They played Idaho. They played Rutgers. They aren't very good. They won't be very good for the rest of the year. Arizona, not a bad football team. So after watching this game on Saturday, I'm going to open it up, take it to a more national standpoint here. Is Washington really, I guess they're the 10th best team in the country now. Are they really that good?
I think we're going to find some real answers this weekend tomorrow night when UW faces number 7 ranked Stanford. I do think Arizona put up an incredible fight. You have to tip your hat to them. I think by the end of the game, they were playing with their third string running back and still made great progress with him. But Washington was able to come out with a win in overtime, which is a tough thing to do, facing some adversity there. And head coach Chris Peterson said at the end of that game, "We've got a lot of work to do in 6 days." And he stated that last week, and I'm hoping that the Dogs have had a productive week at practice.
To your question, Christian, yes, they are that good. The Dogs finally face some adversity in crisis. Guys, what do I always say? We are who we are in crisis. It shows our character. That's probably going to be on my tombstone.
Is Scott in the room? I'm sorry. I heard a Scott quote. Is he in the room?
Little hey, that's, Scott.
That's a Kellen quote.
No, it's stop.
I promise.
Stop.
I promise.
That's right out of your grandpa's book, dude.
Promise on the Bible. Book. Great book, though, by the way. I'll plug that in later. It couldn't have come at a better time. Could not have come better at a better time because they're about to play Stanford. And if they had a crisis game against Stanford, that would be frustrating. But the fact that they had a crisis game the week before Stanford is the best thing for UW football. But two things they need to clean up if they want to beat Stanford. Their special teams needs to be special because they were not special last week. Cameron Van Winkle missed two big field goals last game. Granted, the field goals, they weren't gimme shots. They were a 45-yard field goal as well as a 40-yard field goal. But it's Division I football. You are on a full ride scholarship to put the ball through the uprights, home or away, no matter what the weather is. He's got to do a better job, and that's what he needs to do. That is his job. And that those were big-time field goals. And if he makes those field goals, guys, I believe that game is even stretched out even more. They should have won by 17, in my opinion. But again, he's got to make those. And again, if they want to put points up on the board against Stanford, they're not gonna score a touchdown every single drive. So anytime you can get points, take the points. Hopefully they'll do a better job with that. Second, UW needs to do a better job of spying running quarterbacks. Arizona's quarterback, Brandon Dawkins, I mean, what was he, running a track meet? I mean, he rushed for 180 yards and two touchdowns last game. He averaged 13.5 yards a run and had a long run of 79. Granted, he's kind of Michael Vick-ish, if you will, Lamar Jackson-ish. But you know what? They got to do a better job at spying these quarterbacks. And again, if they want to start to creep in even in that top five category, they got to fix those two things.
Really quick, Kellen, did you see the Michael Vick tweet about Lamar Jackson? He said he is better than him now than Vick was at Virginia Tech.
Five times better.
That's insane.
Yep. I could not believe that tweet.
I think, back to UW football, I think they could be for real. Arizona was a really nice test, and the rest of the schedule will be a don't-tell-me, show-me few weeks for the Huskies, as they can show us if they belong in the top 25 and if they're for real or not. I just wish they would schedule a tougher non-conference set of teams. They might as well have scheduled the Sisters of Charity and South Dakota State Tech, for Pete's sake. I mean, it's not as bad as Iowa's non-conference schedule, but it's still a cakewalk for a Pac-12 team that's nationally ranked. I mean, go schedule somebody. I don't care who, but good Lord, PLU football would give Portland State a run for their money. Good Lord.
Yeah, it's all in a mindset. I think they got their names on the map playing those small schools and putting up 58 points a game, but you're right, it comes down to the crunch time here and conference play, and now it's real. So we'll find out more about them as the week goes on. This Friday night, we've already mentioned it, Stanford pays a visit to the Huskies. Let's talk about it. What should we expect in this game? Can the Huskies stop Christian McCaffrey, who's probably going to win the Heisman, you know, on his first name alone?
Oh, my God.
Like, who's going to win this game?
Well, I will say the Huskies' defense has 9 returning starters. 8 of those 9 are of junior and senior status. Couple names that have some big numbers to go with them. Elijah Qualls is a junior D lineman for the Dogs. Had 4.5 sacks in the 2015 season as only a sophomore. Azeem Victor, we already kind of mentioned him. He's a senior linebacker, made 95 total tackles, 59 of which were unassisted in his junior season. Kellen mentioned earlier he had 10 total tackles against the Wildcats last weekend. And finally, Buda Baker, a junior safety for the Dogs, was an All-American last year and a preseason All-American this year. He has started from the beginning of his freshman season and tallied 129 tackles in just 2 seasons. I think the defense is really experienced, and although Christian McCaffrey is a stud, he's going to be a challenge for him, but I think we can stop him and the Cardinal offense.
So Stanford head coach David Shaw confirmed Tuesday that both Quentin Meeks, who was a teammate of Mark Gallant, who's on the PLU football team, which is a very, very cool side note, and Elijah Holder will not play for the Cardinals against the Huskies. Now, that's big. Mm-hmm. We can't forget about that. The starting quarterbacks were injured in Stanford's Week 4 win over the Bruins over at UCLA. That tandem is expected to be replaced in the starting lineup by Aleem Murphy and Terrence Alexander. Those two will be making their first career starts. In addition to Meeks and Holder, starting fullback Daniel Marks has been ruled out because of an injury suffered against the Bruins as well. So on top of that trio, you add on this, the Cardinals had previously announced that wide receiver Kellen Westring checked that Francis Owosu...
Oh, good Lord.
Sorry. That was kind of fun to say. Francis Owosu has been ruled out of this Saturday's game with a concussion. So they will be playing out with four starters, whereas in my opinion, UW seems to be pretty healthy. So look for Jake Browning, and this is the case for any quarterback seeing that the top two corners are gone. Look for Browning to attack these two new corners with maybe some possible wheel routes with John Ross, maybe some double moves. Again, to Christian's question, you can't stop Christian McCaffrey. You can't stop Kobe Bryant. You can't stop LeBron James. What can you do? You can contain him and make him work for every single yard. The Huskies are at home. You guys all know about how I like my home crowds. I like their chances. I'm going to go with UW 24, Stanford 21. Very, very close game, folks. This is my prediction. I'm not going to put Fraley's Pizza. I'm not going to put McDonald's breakfast on it.
Because we know how those bets go in this room. Exactly. Christian ends up losing, as always.
And I'm already on a budget as it is. And UW is going to win on a game-winning field goal. Come on, Van Winkle. Redeem yourself.
So my answer is very short to this. Can they stop Christian McCaffrey? No. No. Have you watched the kid play? There's nobody in college football to keep up with him. When he runs, it's like playing Madden. Everything is in slow motion. All he has to do is press the juke button to leave the entirety of the defense in his dust. Also, unlike Washington, he has played some big-name powers like Kansas State, USC, and UCLA. The dude is averaging 5.5 yards a carry and 10 yards a reception. Against real competition. Not named Portland State or Rutgers. I mean, lordy be.
Or the sisterhood of the traveling pants.
Or sisterhood of the traveling pants in South Dakota State Tech. Or roast beef tech, or whatever we like to call them these days. The Stanford coaching staff has been brilliant in finding ways to get McCaffrey the ball, and he will run circles around the Huskies. And Lacey, who cares about all the All-Americans? This dude is a Heisman candidate, was in Heisman voting last year, and it's going to be a horse race between him and Lamar Jackson to see who's going to win it this year. I mean, you can't stop Christian McCaffrey. Those more talented who have played better competition have tried and failed.
I have one rule to make on this show. If we are going to mention a South Dakota school, it has to be South Dakota School of the Mines and Technology.
I apologize. I have
a couple buddies out there, and they would really appreciate the the promo. I'm expecting a Hard Rocker shirt in the mail later today.
Well, hey, I assume that Iowa already has them on their schedule for next year.
Yeah, they could.
Ooh.
They could.
Well, true. Low blow.
Dude, you bring up a great point. I mean, you look at the teams that UW has played. I mean, they could basically play University of Phoenix, you know, for all I care. And so you make a great point. Stanford has played some great competition. They're a little bit more ready when it comes to physical play. And so UW, I mean, it's going to be a heck of a battle. Lacey, you're so lucky that you get to be there live. Lacey, quick insight. How'd you get those tickets?
Well, my mom and dad actually have season tickets with my aunt and uncle.
That's awesome.
But my mom is traveling to Texas this weekend to be with my sister. So my dad asked me to go on a date with him. And I said yes.
Aww.
It's going to be a good
jealous,
time.
Huh?
Yeah.
John's jealous, huh? John's jealous. I mean, Kellen, to your point, I mean, you have to have respect for Stanford to go schedule who they scheduled. They don't have to go play those teams. They don't have to, they're non-conference teams, so look at them. They don't have to go play them. For UW and the Pac-12, with as big a name as they are, now especially, to have scheduled Portland State and Rutgers, I mean, go find a team that has a chance at breaking the top 25. Don't go schedule some teams that you know are going to roll. I mean, hey, I love Jake. I've been happy to watch him just tear teams apart. John Ross has been fun. He's just so much more physically talented than the guys he's playing. UW's about to play grown men. Stanford's a grown man, pro-style, punch-in-the-face team. It's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, and I want to bring it back to Christian McCaffrey. Kellen, in your opinion, is he the next-level talent? Is he going to be good at the pro level?
Is he as good? I mean, like, we've seen college players be really good in college and then be absolutely nothing as a professional. Mm-hmm. Is Christian McCaffrey the type of player who will go on to the NFL and be as good as he has been at Stanford?
That's what scares the bejeebers out of me. You look at Matt Leinart, you look at Reggie Bush, guys who were just studs in college, but have basically laid an egg at the professional level. I am a big time Christian McCaffrey fan. Would put the down payment on my house that he should have won the Heisman last year. I think it comes to, you know, whatever time zone, whatever. That's why he didn't quite get those votes, because the viewers couldn't quite watch him play the game of football. I think Christian McCaffrey is going to be amazing at the NFL level. I think he'll probably start out as a returner, and I think he'll kind of work his way up to playing slot receiver. I don't think he's going to be a running back in the NFL. I think they're going to move him to slot receiver.
I think it's ugly to throw him in that same kind of sphere as Toby Gearhart, because he's a completely separate player. Toby Gearhart's that Stanford running back who was super good and had Heisman votes, mm-hmm. and just didn't amount to anything in the NFL.
He's playing for the Vikings, isn't he?
Yeah, but he went to the wrong system. You're not going to run the same offense named Toby Gearhart as you are Adrian Peterson. That just doesn't work. I think Christian McCaffrey will be successful in the NFL. I don't think he's going to be a full-blown superstar, but I think he's going to be a Danny Woodhead-esque sort of player who gets a couple more touches because they're going to split him out in the slot. They're going to motion him around. And if you don't remember, last year he was 2 for 3 throwing the ball for 69 yards and a touchdown. The kid can spin it a little bit, so don't be surprised if you see him motion, take a snap, throw the ball. I'm sure, assuming Stanford's going to pull out all the stops. And, you know, durability is valuable. He can do a lot of things. That's why I think he's going to be good in the NFL.
So my little sister just texted me, very, very angry. Texted me on my mom's phone, which is that's when you know she's angry.
And Shouldn't she be in school?
She said, she's sick right now, bless her heart. She said, how dare you diss Reggie Bush like that? But guys, I think everyone in this room needs to agree with me here. Sorry, Jess, but he really hasn't been great in the NFL. He had some nice punt returns in New Orleans, but he really hasn't been what he was in the college level. I hope you guys agree with me.
He was at his best in New Orleans. He never really found a spot where he could do what he did at USC, and I think that's because they were looking for him to be a solo back, and he was part of a great two-back system at USC with Lendell White. I think he needs a power back to complement his scat back run style, and so you're right. Sorry, Jess.
Sorry,
you're right, Kellen.
And Lendell White, that's another classic name that's laid an egg. So, folks, great stuff, everybody. Up next, we turn our sights to our tough deal of the week. This is Mass Radio Sports Talk presented by 3.5 Athletes on Loot Air Student Radio.
Baseball is a game. It's about hitting. It's about catching. It's about throwing. But most of all, it's about having fun. Why do some ballplayers dip or chew tobacco? I don't really know, but what I can tell you is it doesn't make them better ballplayers. And when they try to quit, it's not fun. So please, do yourself a favor. Just play the game.
Message furnished by Major League Baseball and the Major League Baseball Players Association.
Time to play the game. Time to play the game.
Welcome back to Mass Radio Sports Talk presented by 3.5 Athletes on Loot Air Student Radio. We want to thank Heine for coming in the studio this morning. Folks, if you want to call on the show, please do it. The number to do so is 535-7332. Once again, that is 253-535-7332.
It's time for one of the most opinionated segments on the show. We call it Tough Deals of the Week. You know, sometimes in sports there are those situations where there's not a wrong answer, there's not a right answer. Well, both sides are necessary, you know. You can make an argument for both sides, and that's what we want to talk about today. So, Lacey, what's on your mind?
Well, to start off the tough deals, I got to bring in D3 Athletics fundraising, because this is something that really frustrates me. And let me just clarify. I do not get frustrated with the fact that we have to raise money. I understand we are a D3 university and we don't have a lot of money to spend on all this extra gear and whatnot. I'm okay with teams working for their money. That's fine with me. What bothers me is when we have to directly come up with 10 to 15 contacts and ask people for their hard-earned money. And without any reward at all, can't even throw them a t-shirt or whatever. That bothers me because I have the same 10 contacts that I reach out to every single year. And I don't like asking people for money like that. And I know everyone in my family or family friends is going to be willing to give me money, but I don't want them to have to feel that pressure and feel obligated to do such a thing.
I think we all can relate to you. We all have those 10 names that we have written down in our phones, on our notepad, in our iPhones that we go to for money. When I was in high school, when I got selected to go to the All-State game, it wasn't one of those things where, hey, Kellen, you're selected to go to the All-State game. Here's your jersey. No, I had to sell tickets to be able to play in the game. Some guys didn't even go because they didn't want to go through that process. So it kind of reminds me of that when it comes to D3 athletics. It kind of reminds me of kind of that high school fundraising we all had to do. For the PLU football team, we have this thing called Snap Fundraising.
Okay.
Basically, which is where you pick 10 names, and everybody on the team has to do that. Mm-hmm. You have 10 names, and you send that classic email, but make sure you change the name, right? Don't say, hey, Lacey, when it's actually supposed to go to Lucy. And basically, you ask for money, and it just seems weird when you're at the collegiate level. You would hope that, you know, the school, the program would have to take care of that, but it kind of is in our hands. And I even kind of compare it to our locker room for the PLU football locker room. My Aunt Susie, who's one of the coaches on the coaching staff, went in and painted this amazing kind of, you know, mural / mirage of PLU football, the logo that's on our t-shirt on the wall. It looks unreal.
It looks really good.
Not very good for radio because I have the picture on my phone, but next week we'll have it on Periscope for you guys just to take a look at it. It is unreal. But that's what we have to do. Lacey, you had to paint the women's locker room last year. It's kind of on us if we want to have nice facilities or certain things. And so it's interesting at D3, but again, it is what it is, and we have to accept it. And I think we have, obviously, I think once we came to a Division III school like PLU, we weren't expecting all these fancy things. We knew what we were kind of getting ourselves into. Heine, when you came in from California, you knew there wasn't a stadium, you know. So we know going in what D3 has offered for us, but at the same time, it is hard to have to fundraise for that stuff, Drew.
Before I go into that basketball, do you think that affects your guys' recruiting and your ability to fundraise since you don't have a stadium?
Oh, I'm so glad Lori Turner said that on the air. It was so good to hear that because I think some people don't realize that. You know, you go to the Linfields of the world, the Willamettes, the George Foxes. They have that Jumbotron. You come in. I mean, they have all these things. They have their own field. For us, we got to drive 20 minutes to the stadium. We walk by our locker room on our recruiting visits. Oh, hey, what's that room? Oh, don't worry about that. Let's talk about the food here at PLU. You know, we try to avoid those kinds of things. And so no question, having the turf field was really help recruiting, because after we got the turf field, what did we do the next year? Oh, we went to the playoffs. We were ranked 19th in the country. So when you have facilities, when you have nice things, that's what high schoolers love, Drew.
Yeah, and, you know, I want to relate, and I can relate because I'm a D3 athlete, but men's basketball is the number one alumni donor base on this campus in terms of sports. We are very blessed, very well connected. It's a great thing to be a PLU men's basketball player. We get a lot of help, but, you know, we feel the same pains you do, is that, and this is where it goes for me, it doesn't go to the lack of a football stadium, or it doesn't go to asking people for money for me. What it comes down to is that as a varsity athlete, I am sometimes kicked out of facilities when I want to get workout in because there is a club sport or a non-NCAA sport or a intramurals or a some class that needs to use those facilities. Like the weight room's closed for 2 hours a day in the middle of the day for classes. Like the weight room was closed and all the gyms were closed for the first 6 days we were on campus this year. The first 6 days, we brought in over 90 new student athletes on campus and didn't have a gym open for them to work out in and didn't have a basketball court for them to shoot on. Soccer field was locked. Everything. Done. That's where it comes down to me, is that athletes, NCAA athletes, get kicked out of facilities because we don't have the money to pay for right facilities. So either there needs to be a pecking order established where you can't kick out an athlete, or Something needs to change, and there needs to be a rec center built, period.
So I will speak for the half athletes here at POU. Drew, are you saying
that as an athlete, you are better than me?
No, as an athlete who represents this school, I should be allowed, when my schedule permits, my schedule as a student athlete, we have student athletes around the room. When my schedule is like that, when you are the half athlete and my schedule is like that, I need to work out when I have time to work out around homework, around school, around the show, around everything. So if you can, if you're going to be able to kick me out when I'm doing that, that's when I have a problem. So no, I'm not saying I'm more important. I'm saying, but as an athlete who makes this school money and competes for this school, I deserve that space.
Yeah, and you kind of took it to the extreme levels of the facilities. I'm talking more about just the gear we get every year. And for women's basketball, I believe men's basketball is the same. We're fortunate to get new gear every year as far as travel gear.
Yes.
We don't get new uniforms.
No.
Travel gear and basketball shoes. I don't think the football team gets that luxury. But
you say that smiling.
But it's... We're not paying for the gear. I put that in quotes. We're not paying for the gear, but we're fundraising for the gear, so we might as well be paying for it.
The gear.
Which I don't have a problem. Like I said, I do not have a problem going out and working hard for the things we get. That's fine. My tough deal is asking for money. I don't like that.
So maybe the university doesn't like it either. Maybe it's why we have all of these struggles. But at the end of the day, that's the job of the athletic department. That's the job of the university. Can't help but notice the $3 million organ we have sitting in the music hall. And the fitness center that is frankly rivaled by the local Y. And we have college athletes working here competing, making you money to represent your school. I understand it's not the Division I level or the Division II level where sports are million-dollar draws for universities. But if you're going to have athletics, it is your responsibility to fund them properly and make sure they are able to use equipment that is necessary for their sport.
But do you know the percentage of athletes there are at PLU considered to the whole student population? We're a smaller percentage than when considering the whole population at PLU. So if you've been around PLU's campus this summer, as of right now, they've been making a lot of changes, which I think are good changes because we talk about recruiting in athletics, and you talk about how high school athletes want to see that cool locker room or the stadium, all that. But you're also recruiting for just your average everyday student, and students also want to see a nicer library, good, just like an appealing campus. And I think that's something that PLU has put their money towards this last summer. And I think that's a good move. But I do agree that athletics is kind of getting the short end of the
stick. You can also flip it too, Lacey, to your point, where as Christian, the half athlete here, I think he also wants us to have a football stadium because he loves sports. And he would love that for PLU. And I think students also, Friday night, they have a late night. They go to brunch the next morning. They walk over to the stadium. How easy is that? You know, how easy is that?
And I also think for the half athlete too, Christian, is that wouldn't you love to not have 30 athletes in that weight room and the entire basketball team having just open gym and just everybody trying to get their workouts in and stuff, and you can't use the facilities anyways because there's not enough?
There is an intimidation factor when you go into workout and you see all the football guys throwing 60 and 80 pound, you know, dumbbells up over their head, just struggling to get weight up, and you're like, "Oh, I'll be happy with my 25s or whatever." But yeah, like
I love it.
It's an intimidation factor, but it's kind of part of the game.
Yeah, it is part of the game. But I just, Kellen, you guys have PLU football has been a staple of Division III for a while. You guys had a couple great runs. You guys are back on track. You guys are getting better. You guys deserve a stadium on campus. Lacey, it's a raw deal that you have to paint your own locker room. It's a raw deal that you have to ask for money. It's a raw deal. But I think as far as athletes around campus, I think it's a really tough deal that we can get kicked out of facilities as athletes who are making the school money instead of costing the school money.
And the last thing I'll say before we go to a break, I really wish that athletes, when it came to soccer athletes and football athletes, we had a swipe card to get on the turf whenever we want.
Yeah, 24 hours swipe access. Want.
The fact that it's closed, the fact that we have to hop the fence, hurt our hands on the little scraper deal there, that's not okay.
Yeah.
I mean, that turf field should be used anytime. It's not grass. We're not going to mess it up. What are we going to get, rubber in our socks? I mean, what's the worst that can happen?
I agree.
That's one thing I also wish we could have. Great tough deal, Lacey. Proud of you. So, folks, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, one of our favorite segments, the Seahawks will be underway. Find out what we think they will do next. And should Russell Wilson play? This is Mass Radio Sports Talk presented by 3.5 Athletes on Loot Air Student Radio.
NFC, AFC, offensive linemen, defensive tackles, quarterbacks, and cornerbacks are all living united to ensure the academic success of millions of kids in our communities all the way to graduation day. But that won't happen without you. So take the pledge at unitedway.org. Make a difference in the life of a child. Suit up like your favorite NFL players and become a volunteer reader, tutor, or mentor with United Way.
Welcome back to Mass Radio Sports Talk presented by 3.5 Athletes on Loot Air Student Radio. If you want to call into the show, please do it. The number to do so is 253-535-7332. Once again, that is 253-535-7332. Folks, we're still waiting on our first phone call of the year. It could be you.
Absolutely right. I want to remind everyone that my name is Christian Bond. I am the half athlete here at POU. I'm joined by Kellen Westring of POU Football. He's a wide receiver. He wears number 7. Lacey Nicholson of POU Women's Basketball is in studio. She wears number 44. And Drew Artisoni, everyone's favorite point forward, wears number 32 on the basketball team. So let's jump into some Seahawk conversation here. Before we get to this week's game against the New York Jets, let's take a look back. The Seahawks played against the 49ers. It was a boat race. Seahawks tore them up. The offense was effective. What stood out to everybody on Sunday?
Well, let me just say, I'm so happy to see that the Seahawks offense is finally back. They were really connecting this last weekend. Doug Baldwin and Jimmy Graham each had over 100 yards receiving, along with a touchdown apiece. But who really stood out to me was Christian Michael, who was a force on offense. He had 106 of the team's 127 rush yards. He had 5 of 3 yards per carry on 20 carries. Michael scored 2 touchdowns for the Hawks. It was fun. It was fun to watch the offense this weekend. I wasn't cringing on my couch.
You know, Russell Wilson stood out to me, but not for the best reason. Without Marshawn and without Thomas Rawls, he's gonna need to be the motor that drives the Seahawks offense. He has to be smarter. He cannot continue to put his body at undue risk. He needs to slide. Play for the next down. Okay? Now I understand. Kellen, I know where you're going. I understand that his elusiveness, his mobility, and his ability to extend plays are what makes him special. I get it. But he can't be special from the sidelines. His health needs to be his priority. I understand he's not the most selfish guy in the world. But sooner or later, he's got to realize that he is the leader. You can only lead so much from the sidelines, and that ball doesn't move without him. He's got to be smarter. He cannot give up injury like that. The Hawks can be good. Without him, they're not so good.
Couldn't agree more, Drew. And I kind of relate that to our quarterback situation here at PLU, John Schaub. My dad says, John, if you run the ball again, you'll be standing by our offensive coordinator the rest of the game. So John Schaub will be pitching the ball on every option play. Cole Chandler will be pitching the ball on 3rd-and-2 in Trinity next time we play them next year. So as Lacey mentioned, Jimmy Graham was outstanding. He stood out to me big time. 6 grabs for 100 yards and a touchdown. You saw him kind of finally start to trust that knee injury that he had last year, which I know from experience is a huge, huge mental victory and a big-time hurdle to get over. You saw him attack the ball. He didn't let it come to him. He attacked the ball with that big-time 6'7 basketball frame. And you even saw him fight for those extra yards, trying to get that first down. And again, I love his enthusiasm. After he catches a pass, I believe that inspires a team. It was funny. I was watching the game a couple weeks ago. My dad kind of made a funny comment about it, like, geez, Jimmy, act like you've been there before. But I was like, you know what, Dad? Excuse me. I actually enjoy that. I like that enthusiasm. Jimmy Graham, again, coming from a new team, the Saints, a lot of expectation for him. Has he lived up to it? That can be an argument in itself. But I love the enthusiasm. I love him pointing first down. That kind of gets his other teammates involved, gets them going as well. So I have no problem with that. I was proud of the way Jimmy Graham played. And a little bit of a side note, he was in Russell Wilson's wedding. So it kind of shows the friendship that him and Russell have that not many people knew about.
So Drew's already talked about it a little bit.
Sorry, Christian.
Russell Wilson got rolled up awkwardly on a tackle. He returned to the field, but interesting side note, if a player returns to the field during the game, teams do not have to file an injury report, which is why I think he returned onto the field, especially with the team being up 24-3. The Seattle Seahawks didn't have to tell everyone what the significance of the injury was. After the Jets game, next week is the Seahawks' bye week. The question I want to pitch here is, should Russell Wilson play this week?
So I guess my quick question is, do we know what the injury is, or is that not concrete right now? So I've heard rumor of an MCL strain.
Yeah, the rumor is MCL strain. Okay. That is the rumor from the camp. However, it looked ugly.
It looked ugly, and I could not even watch. They were replaying it so many times in slow motion. I could not watch, you guys. It looked scary. But hopefully MCL strain is not too severe. But having said that, I do not think Russell should play this weekend. He can take some recovery time. The Seahawks will be just fine against the Jets with Boykin as their QB. He handled himself well in the last quarter and a half of the game last week. Shortly after Wilson's injury, when Boykin was put in, I couldn't help but listen to the commentators talk about how Boykin has such a similar style to Russell Wilson, which is really beneficial for the offense. So when Boykin goes in, they don't have to change much. He's very similar, unlike PLU's offense, when you have John Schaub in and then you throw Cole Chandler in, it's a completely different dynamic. So that's a huge win for the Hawks, and I think they'll be able to have some rhythm there. Last weekend, Boykin was 7 of 9 for 65 yards with one touchdown. Having Russell Wilson with the ankle injury and now the knee injury, I think it's best that he sits out this week and then has the bye week next weekend. Give him some time to recover.
All right. What do you think, Kellen?
After the Jets, the Hawks have a bye week. Russell could get the next 3 weeks off. Obviously, he'll practice if he's going to play, but he could get 3 games off. Games are very, very different than practice. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, that would be the smart thing to do, knowing my injury history, knowing what it takes to be 100% healthy for game day. NFL is a very, very long season. It's not Division III where you only get 9 guaranteed games. It's about the long run, not the short term. The Hawks just need to sit back and let Ryan Fitzpatrick be Ryan Fitzpatrick. I'm not saying he's going to throw 6 picks again, but I guarantee you he will throw at least 2. I guarantee it. Men's Warehouse. I was very pleased with the way Boykins played. A lot like Lacey said, the reason why the Hawks kept him, because he had some problems off the field, they kept him because he's very, very similar to number 3 in Russell Wilson. He stayed within himself during the game. He didn't try to win the Heisman. He didn't try to be someone he isn't. He played within the system, had a very, very mature interview after the game, which I really, really respected. I trust that guy. I think he should get the start.
You know, Boykin looks to be a serviceable backup, Kellen, but you gain street cred in the NFL by playing hurt. It's a toughness thing. His O-line runs through walls from him and battles for him in the trenches on a weekly basis. So Russell can make a statement by playing this week. Went over a locker room and a city and put this prima donna red carpet offseason behind him and be the guy. Mm-hmm. I really liked when Russell Wilson was spending his time at children's hospitals, not on red carpets with Ciara. Mm-hmm. I like that guy a little better.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. All right, let's get it started. Let's make our predictions for the weekend. What are the Seahawks going to do on Sunday?
Well, surprise, the Seahawks are going to win, as always.
What, are they going to go undefeated this year?
Seattle's defense is only giving up 12.33 points per game. The Jets' defense is giving up 26 points per game. The Jets are coming off a horrible loss against the Chiefs, 24-3. In that game, the Jets had 8 turnovers. Mm. Kellen already mentioned 6 interceptions and 2 fumbles. They're averaging 3.3 turnovers a game. On the Hawks' defensive end, they're only allowing 253 total yards per game. I just think the Hawks are going to come away with a win, and regardless of what quarterback's starting, I think the defensive end is going to get it done, and the offense will not have that pressure on their shoulders, and they'll be able to be free and get some points on the board.
All right. Drew, what do you think is going to happen in New York this week?
On Sunday, the Seahawks will lose.
Mm.
The Seahawks always show up against the Niners, and they did last week. However, it came at a cost, as they might have lost Russell Wilson for the first time being with in his sprained knee. So the Hawks are going to have to turn to Trayvon Boykin, the pride of TCU, to operate their offense this week, probably. And even if they don't have to, they should. Now, one of the main reasons...
Wait, you said that Russell should play.
No, I said that Russell should play, but if he wants to win that street cred. But what I said is Trayvon Boykin, he shouldn't play. He shouldn't play, but he should if he wants to put this offseason behind him.
Oh, okay.
I'm saying is that's what he should do, but smart guy, smart Pete Carroll, no. So if they want to put Trayvon Boykin in, that's what I think they should do, keep everybody healthy. He looked good in the preseason, but the Jets' defense is tough. They also have that Ivy League alumni under center with a fantastic beard. Just a solid quarterback. It's been said every week it's a quarterback's lead, and I'm taking the Ivy League educated crafty vet over the green rookie. It's going to be a low-scoring affair. Jets will win 17-14. Mm. I think the Jets are going to win on the rule that when you get embarrassed on national television, you always come back strong the next week.
There it is. All right, Kellen, what do you think?
It's a great point there, Drew, but I got to disagree. On Sunday, the Seahawks will win. Like I said, the Hawks just need to sit back and let Ryan Fitzpatrick be Ryan Fitzpatrick, which in my opinion is an accident waiting to happen. The Jets, like Drew mentioned, they have a great defense on paper, and I like their head coach. I like what he's doing there. But I think the Hawks will be able to score just enough to win. I believe Trayvon Boykin should play. The reason why I think they're not going to score a lot of points is because Boykin's in. He's not quite Russell Wilson, but let's be honest, who is? It will be a low-scoring game, and I believe the Hawks are going to score 13. The Jets are going to put up 10. So Hawks 13, Jets 10, a great road win. That's my opinion. But, Drew, I do respect your point talking about, you know, the beard of Ryan Fitzpatrick, because that needs to be mentioned.
It has to be mentioned.
Christian, what do you think is going to happen?
On Sunday, the Seahawks will lose. I'm not very good at this so far. I haven't picked up a win yet. I haven't been right yet.
You're 0-for, man.
I am 0-for. It's going to come down to the matchups like it does every week in the NFL. I mean, every team is good. The separation comes in the matchups. The Jets had 39 sacks last season. Muhammad Wilkerson had 12 on the season. Sheldon Richardson had 5. David Harris had 4.5. Calvin Pace and Leonard Williams each had 3. It's going to be a game a lot like the first two that we saw this year. And I like that you guys went with the low scores, because whatever that Seahawk offense was last week, I have no idea where it came from. It was confusing. It didn't look like anything else we had seen this year. The New York Jets allowed the second fewest rushing yards, averaging 83 yards per game. So the combination of a poor offensive line, the Jets' ability to get after quarterbacks, the Jets' ability to stop a running game, it's going to limit Christine Michael, who had a nice game last week. See, Russell Wilson, they're going to be able to keep him in the pocket. They're going to take care of business against Russell Wilson. It's going to be a tough loss for the Seahawks going into the bye week. They're going to go 2-2 into the bye week.
Guys, some great insight. So, folks, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we will take a look at our ex-girlfriend, I mean the Seattle Mariners. This is Mass Radio Sports Talk presented by 3.5 Athletes.
My hair is kind of different. Not everyone likes the way I dress. And I don't look like other people.
Me neither. Everyone is different. But no one deserves to be bullied. So be kind, stay positive, and support each other.
Every single day.
Together we can change the game!
Welcome back to Mast Radio Sports Talk, presented by 3.5 Athletes on Loot Air Student Radio. My name is Christian Bond. I am the half athlete here at POU. I'm joined by POU football's Kellen Westering, also joined by POU basketball's Lacey Nicholson and Drew Artisoni. let's get into a little bit about the Mariners here. It's been a wild season, very wacky. They had a series against the Twins. How'd that go, Drew?
Let me tell you why baseball is such a crazy sport, guys. After our show Thursday, the M's bats woke up in a big way, tallying 10 runs on the Twins. Smacked them 10-1. But turned around the next day and lost 3-2. And then turned around the next day and beat them on Sunday 4-3. Looking to the last 15 games, they only win when they tally 3-plus runs and give their pitchers a nice lead to protect. Anything less than 3, the M's aren't winning games.
Yeah, that seems like the magic number this year. The Mariners got to get 3 runs on the board, and the pitching staff, the bullpen, they'll take care of the rest. After the series with the Twins, the M's sat 2.5 games behind that second wild card spot with about 7 games left to go. Last few days have been crucial for the playoff picture. Kellen, how did the series against the Astros go?
So it was positive. We took 2 out of 3 against the Astros, but the game we lost, I was in the UC watching it, which was game 2 of the series. Queen Felix, which he deserves, was on the mound that night. The Astros had a 6-run inning. They lost 8-4 that night. Now, I know we can talk a little bit about some throwing errors made by the Mariners. I won't mention names, but Felix is the best player on this roster. Everyone looks to him. We talked about his leadership the last couple weeks. The team goes as he goes, and in my opinion, he has to have a better showing, knowing that that game meant so much to the franchise.
It's crazy, you know. The series against the Twins, I felt the Mariners needed to sweep that in order to put themselves in contention. I mean, they technically are, but it'd be much nicer to sit one game out with 4 games left. However, the standings right now look this way. The Toronto Blue Jays are at the top. They're 1 game up on the wild card. They will be hosting the wild card game if they stay in that spot. Baltimore is in that second wild card spot. They play Toronto today. So they could be tied by the end of this, or they could be 2 games back. The Orioles could be 2 games back from the Blue Jays. The Detroit Tigers sit 1 game out. They have a game against the Indians later today. The Cleveland Indians are already in the playoffs. They've clinched their division. The Mariners are 2 games back with 4 games left in the season. In order for the Mariners to create a tiebreaker, it looks like the Tigers will have to go 2-2 in their last 4. And the Orioles would have to go 1-3 in their last 4 for the Mariners to create that tie.
Correct.
It's possible.
It is very possible, but it's so tough to to jump 2 games when there's only 4 left. So
exactly.
Drama came last night. The Orioles had a pinch hit home run that gave them the lead in the top of the 9th inning with 2 outs against the Blue Jays, and that kind of felt like the dagger on the season. Rather than having to make 1 game up in the final 4 games, the M's have to make 2 games up in 4 games, but I don't know if there's enough time left.
Yeah, Christian, I mean, you know, the M's hold that tiebreaker over the Orioles, though, 6-1, so I mean, I think they've proven they're a better ball club than them, which is kind of sad to see them make the wild card picture just because.
Right. It could happen. There's still time. There's only 4 games left for everybody. On Sunday, everyone throws the first pitch at the same time, so, you know, who knows? It'll be a crazy day. Next week when we come in here, we could be talking about how crazy those tiebreaker games were, or we could be wrapping up the Mariners season and moving on to whatever's next.
Yep.
All right, so that'll do it for Mast Radio Sports Talk, presented by 3.5 Athletes this week. Tune into Laser later today. They're Terrence Take. The Arts and Culture podcast here on Laser will be live. It starts at 4 p.m. Taryn Warden and Matthew Salzano will be talking about all the latest celebrity gossip and what's going on in a world that I don't know much about. So tune in and listen to that.
Today's been very fun, folks. I am Kellen Westring.
I am Lacey Nicholson.
I'm Gerard Asoni.
And I am Christian Bond. Tune into the show next week on Thursday from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. We're out of here. See ya.